Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum, and today we're having a cocktail hour for the grasshopper.
Oh man, I had a whole bit ready where I was going to say not the grasshopper, the grasshopper, but the grasshopper, the drink. But yes, we're talking about the grasshopper, the drink.
Oh, I'm sorry. No. I mean, we should one day definitely talk about eating insects.
We should. There's the cicada ice cream. Mm-hmm. Grasshoppers are a pretty popular insect food as far as insects go.
Yeah, like a nice little bar snack or something like that.
Yeah.
I've had mealworm cookies. It tastes kind of like oatmeal cookies. Yeah, it's fun times.
It is fun times. We will return to that.
But shall.
In this episode, we're going to talk about the drink and pie also. And in classic Savor fashion, we missed the tent pole, as we call it in the biz, event of St. Patrick's Day.
Although the grasshopper cocktail has nothing particularly to do with Ireland.
It's just green.
It's just green. We here in America have decided
that's Ireland.
It's just Irish. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And I will say I used to love mint chocolate chip ice cream, and that extended to grasshoppers, which I've actually only had twice in my life. Once I won a grasshopper at a local restaurant.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was my first, like, boozy grasshopper because I've had, like, mint chocolate chip ice cream milkshakes before.
Sure.
But I won an alcoholic one at a local restaurant when I was in college. And then I have a really good friend who's probably listening. Hi, Marissa. she made alcoholic grasshoppers a couple years ago. Like, she homemade them, and they were delicious.
Oh, yeah. I bet that they were.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that people like things.
Mm-hmm.
For me, grasshoppers are not one of those things.
Have you had one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I categorically, my current age, disapprove of cream being in cocktails.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an experience that I enjoy. But, I mean, even during my days when, like, my ultimate drink was a mudslide,
yeah.
I was like, why does this grasshopper thing exist?
Did you like mint chocolate chip ice cream?
I loved mint chocolate chip ice cream.
Oh, that's weird then.
I don't know. Yeah.
Because to me, the two times I've had it in my life, the alcohol was not— I didn't
really notice it. Yeah.
It was essentially a mint chocolate chip ice cream shake.
Maybe I've just never had, like, decent creme de menthe.
Maybe.
In it, and maybe I was mad about that. I'm not sure.
Maybe. I mean, they are very particular. I probably would order them. If I had my druthers, I'd probably order them, like, once a year, maybe twice, maybe.
Minus the cream, I do like chocolate flavors and alcohol and mint flavors and alcohol, so.
Huh. Okay. We need to find one in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Actually, I know exactly where to find one, the place where I won one. but in the meantime, for you listeners, this brings us to our question.
Mm-hmm.
The grasshopper. What is it? Well, it is equal parts heavy cream, green creme de menthe, and white creme de cacao. Shake, strain, enjoy. It's green and sweet and sometimes garnished with an Oreo, like, on the side and or crushed Oreos on the rim.
Oh,
sometimes it's topped with chocolate. Lauren, hold your judgment.
Oh, sorry. Okay, yeah.
Sometimes it's topped with chocolate shavings. Wisconsin has their own variation, which does sub out the cream with ice cream. We are going to get more into that later.
Oh, yeah.
I love this quote from a mixologist out of Portland. When I first started tending bar, I had a bunch of regulars who were all from Wisconsin. They were about my age, and a lot of them were former bartenders. They indoctrinated me into Wisconsin style of drinking, which is all about fun. I do like that.
I do. Maybe it's my sweetness and alcohol thing that I'm running into. Anyway, I'm sorry. No judgment if this is what you like.
No, it's a heavy drink for sure. It's a dessert drink.
It is.
And I have plenty of friends who do not like mint. And I am not—possibly I'm allergic. I don't know. But I understand, Lauren. I'm not judging you as you are not judging other people.
So I'm going on a minor emotional journey here. But, okay, yeah, there are any number of variations on the grasshopper. Non-alcoholic milkshakes flavored with mint and chocolate are often called grasshoppers. The Twinkie Cookbook,
oh God,
which is a thing that exists.
I love it.
Has a recipe that involves blending whole Twinkies into such a milkshake.
Into a grasshopper?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Creamy. Sure.
Sure, yeah.
You can swap out the heavy cream and add in an equal part of vodka, and that's a flying grasshopper.
Uh-huh.
I feel like that would be more my style. I don't know.
I could see that, yeah.
Or you can add coffee for a brown grasshopper.
Mm-hmm. A Marie grasshopper has green chartreuse, cream de cacao white, and Ancho Reyes liquor, fresh cream, and mint.
I read about a bar in Phoenix that serves, or possibly served, past tense, a cocktail called the Green Chapulon, which is a creamy mint cocktail made with Branca Menta, which is a minty Amaro that's more bitter than creme de menthe, and is served with a sidecar of roasted grasshoppers coated in chili dust.
Oh, I'm into that.
I know, right?
Oh, jeez.
Sounds excellent.
Yes.
And yes, in these our modern times, bitters or an Amaro are common additions or substitutions in grasshoppers at cocktail bars. The grasshopper is one that some bartenders really enjoy riffing on, usually minus the cream element and plus a good dose of earthy, bitter flavors. The praying mantis with rum chata, which I guess isn't that earthy or bitter. The grasshopper swizzle with pandan and five spice. A bar in London called Stillwater does a clarified grasshopper milk punch. A clarified milk punch being one in which you you blend a drink involving both milk and an acid like lemon juice that will curdle the milk. You let that sit overnight and then strain out the curds, and the resulting drink will have the smoothness of a cream cocktail without the weight of the cream.
Oh.
Yeah. So I actually really want to try that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Indeed. There's also indeed grasshopper pie, and more on that one later.
Yes.
Okay. But to really understand what the grasshopper is, you need to know about those ingredients. So, cream, creme de menthe, creme de cacao.
What are they?
Well, you probably know what cream is. You know, milk with a higher percentage of milk fat left in or added back in during processing. In the States, whipping cream is about 35% milk fat and heavy cream is about 38%. Milk fat. And you want to go for heavy cream when you're mixing in an alcohol or acids like citrus, because the fat content is so high that they don't contain enough caseins to actually form curds. So you will prevent your drink from curdling by using that heavy cream.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. But let's look at those alcohols.
Yes. Creme de menthe, which translates from French to mint cream, doesn't contain cream, about 50 proof. Creme de cacao, translate from French into cacao cream, also doesn't contain cream, also about 50%.
50 proof, 25%.
Oh, yes. Sorry, yes, correct. According to the European Union, creme de has nothing to do with cream, but requires that the liquor has to have 250 grams of sugar per liter.
Yeah, there are lots of liqueurs or liquors called creme de. Whatever. Yes. Creme de violet is another popular one and is what gives aviations that lovely purple. But yeah, creme de et cetera comes in just about every flavor. Peach, passion fruit, strawberry, raspberry, blackberry, blackcurrant, grapefruit, melon, figs, hazelnut, bananas, newfangled stuff like lychee.
Ooh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this usage of creme for liqueurs comes from about the 1820s. And it's possible that the etymology is based on cream in the poetical sense, is in like the best part of or the essence of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or since creme indicates a thicker viscosity than other liquors, what with all that sugar, the etymology could come from the thickness of cream. Not sure there.
Mysteries. We all know it.
Mm-hmm. Creme de menthe comes in two basic varieties, the green or the white, whereby white they mean clear. And originally, the green variety got its color from steeping mint leaves in whatever base alcohol, whatever neutral base alcohol you were using. These days, it's more likely to be food coloring. Creme de cacao comes in brown or white, whereby white, they also mean clear. And again, originally came from just steeping cacao beans in a base alcohol. But, you know, now it's what have you.
She's put her fist under her chin and she's shaking her head. Whatever that means to you, that's what we're trying to communicate.
That is. Yeah, those gesticulations in podcast formats.
Mm-hmm.
So useful.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, they are fairly sweet and fairly light on the actual booze.
Right. The current owner of Two Jacks in New Orleans, the bar that often gets the credit for the invention of the grasshopper nearly a century ago, once said, "It's not really a strong drink, so if you give your 9-year-old a sip of this mint chocolate chip drink, it's not giving them a sip of bourbon. This is New Orleans, right?" We didn't make it there. We were too full. We passed it.
Yeah.
And we were too – if we're full, there's so many things. Apparently, nowadays, their iteration comes with a brandy float. And they celebrated 100 years of grasshoppers in 2018, and we were there. But we didn't go.
It's – we fit in a lot, but we couldn't do it all. We were only there for 5 days.
It's true. Here's the recipe if you want it. 1 ounce white creme de cacao, 1/2 ounce dark creme de cacao, 1/2 ounce green creme de menthe, 1/4 ounce white creme de menthe, 1/8 ounce brandy, 1/2 ounce heavy whipping cream. And I'm sure you can find the recipe somewhere, but I'm probably just shake it, strain it.
Yeah.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
If we're looking at nutrition,
it's a sugary dessert drink with cream in it.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a treat. It's a treat.
It's a treat for sure. We do have some numbers. Two Jack sells hundreds of these a week. The owner pointed out, since people don't typically have the ingredients to make a grasshopper on hand, it's preferred to buy at a bar when you've got a hankering for one. On top of tourists like us who just go to get one because that's where they come from, they have generations of older folks who have been enjoying the grasshopper since its possible inception.
Absolutely.
I definitely agree with that. There are certain drinks where I'm just not going to buy. I just don't have creme de menthe.
Right. I'm not going to go out and buy that for my home use.
Yes.
I would totally. I mean, I frequently have something to the extent of Branca. Mentha at home. So, yeah, I don't know. I think I need to reevaluate this entire. Okay.
I think you do too.
Right.
There's one establishment in Wisconsin, the Benedetti's Supper Club, where your order of a grasshopper uses 3/4 of a gallon of ice cream.
I'm sure that that's meant to serve more than one human person.
Meant to.
Oh.
But I bet it doesn't. I would drink it, probably.
Goodness my gracious. I would not. My body.
It would just, you'd be like a grasshopper going, drying up. The grasshopper is experiencing a bit of a resurgence right now.
Yeah.
A bit. For a long time, it's been seen as something your grandmother would drink or a guilty pleasure. But now bartenders are starting to have some fun with it. I read about one in L.A. that's made with mezcal. I don't want it.
I don't want cream in my mezcal. Okay, no, but yes, as of 2014, one bartender in Toronto reported to the Globe and Mail that he had served more grasshoppers in the past year than he had in the previous 18 years combined.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. Whoa and wow. All together.
No, old-fashioned drinks are definitely, as part of the craft cocktail movement, coming back. And this one is truly, truly old-fashioned. So let us get into that. But first, let us take a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you. Okay. So we are going to have to go in a few different directions to get this one to come together,
yes.
Historically speaking. First, cream in drinks.
Mm-hmm.
Milk or cream might have been added to alcoholic drinks going all the way back to the 1200s CE or earlier, with concoctions like the caudle, which was sweetened spiced beer plus cream or egg or oatmeal to thicken the drink. You can see our butterbeer episode for more on that. cream-based cocktails as we know them today would have originated in the very earliest days of cocktails in soda fountains in the last couple decades of the 1800s. Sweet syrups and sometimes medicinal liqueurs or tinctures were often blended with ice cream or with cream to make them more palatable.
As Lauren knows, and I'm about to share with you, I am very obsessed with the movie Into the Spider-Verse.
And it's very good.
Oh, God. It's amazing.
Right?
And Nicolas Cage, Spider-Noir. I love when he says, I like drinking egg creams.
I have never felt so seen by a Nick Cage character as when
that. Yeah. Oh, no, when he's got the match and he's like, sometimes I just light a match and I let it burn down just to feel something. And then he goes, oh. That's the best.
I liked the egg creams part, but I feel you. We are all in some way
Nick Cage Spider-Noir. But anyway, go on.
Okay. All right. Back to grasshopper cocktails. All right. So let's sidestep slightly from the cream and cocktails concept because around the same time, in 1885, a pharmacist named Emile Giffard was studying mint in Angers, France. He was looking into mint's cooling and possible digestive properties and wound up steam distilling some clear alcohol with peppermint leaves. The peppermint leaves were of a varietal called Black Mitcham, imported from England. And he did this and created, thusly, a mint liqueur. He called it menthe pastille after a popular type of mint candy and tested this new creation out on the patrons of a nearby hotel. It was so popular that he converted his pharmacy into a distillery in order to create this and other botanical liqueurs. And yes, that Giffard, because Giffard is still a very popular brand of creme de fill-in-the-blanks.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Specifically, menthe pastille was very well known in France from about 1895 all the way through World War II, due in part to some super successful illustrated poster campaigns. They're gorgeous. Just Google it. My favorite might be Jonah sitting in the mouth of the whale with a bottle of menthe pastille. And the caption reads, "Saved! I had menthe pastille."
Oh, yeah. That sounds pretty excellent.
Yeah. Creme de menthe, meanwhile, came a couple years after menthe pastille, around 1887, with the addition of more sugar to the mix. And again, was probably a creation of Giffard's, although, you know.
Yeah.
His was certainly the popular brand.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He at some point might have switched to using a local mint species called Corsican mint. The internet claims that this is the classic flavoring for creme de menthe, but I couldn't find a direct source on that. Both Black Mitcham and Corsican mint contain a lot of menthol, so that's part of that sharp bite that you get from creme de menthe.
And I have a fun, well, I think it's fun, random fact. Sergei Rachmaninoff, the Russian composer, conductor, pianist, and teetotaler, confessed to a friend a few days before the world premiere of the Paganini Rhapsody that he was nervous about parts of it, specifically for our music-inclined friends, the high jumps in the 24th variation.
Mm-hmm.
His friend, who he was talking to about this nervousness, pushed him to try the creme de menthe because this guy said he knew of nothing better for jumps. Interesting.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Rachmaninoff hesitated but was anxious enough to try it. So the friend got a butler to pour a nice-sized glass of creme de menthe, which Rachmaninoff downed. Afterwards, he attempted the piece for his friend, kind of like for him specifically, and pulled it off flawlessly, as the story goes. Supposedly, Rachmaninoff drank a large glass of the stuff before his highly praised performance in Philadelphia of this piece, and from then on, and he never failed to have some creme de menthe before playing that piece in public.
Huh.
When Rachmaninoff gave a score inscribed to the friend that convinced him to try creme de menthe before playing this, the 24th variation was labeled the creme de menthe variation. Which I love.
Oh, Rachmaninoff. All right.
Yeah.
Stuff I didn't know.
The stuff you didn't know? There's an NBC / How Stuff Works mashup.
Ooh, there. Yeah, yeah. Someone get one of our music geniuses on this.
Yes, please.
Okay, yeah. And yeah, the Giffard brand is still family owned and operated, fourth generation now, out in France.
Oh, I just got legitimately very happy about that, and I'm not sure why, but good on you. Good on you.
Yeah, absolutely. The history of creme de cacao is a little harder to track down, perhaps because it does not have such a prominent brand specifically behind its creation. Mm-hmm. We do know that cacao was in France by the 1600s and that monks there were experimenting with creating distilled spirits around the same time, and especially with these, again, medicinal preparations created by steeping various botanicals, herbs, nuts, seeds in distilled alcohol. Again, surely someone could have done that with mint before Giffard, but
probably.
Who knows?
Yeah.
At any rate, by the mid-1800s, several French production companies were making creme de cacao, and it is one of the key ingredients in the gin or brandy Alexander, which combines it with the named liquor and cream mm-hmm. again. Recipes for the gin version of that first started showing up in the 19-teens. So everything is kind of swirling together, but not quite mixing.
Until. Yeah, let's talk about the grasshopper itself. So according to cocktail legend, Guillaume and Marie Tujac opened Tujac's in 1856. In the 1910s, Philibert Guichet and his family purchased that restaurant. And Guichet allegedly invented the grasshopper at a cocktail competition in a little city you might have heard of called New York City, and he won second place for it. And it was pretty much the same as it is today, equal parts cream, creme de menthe, and creme de cacao. The story goes he called it grasshopper because of the color. That makes sense. He took the drink with him when he moved to New Orleans and featured it at Tujac's. Now, because this was around the time of Prohibition, written records are a little sparse.
Yeah, yeah. I think that he hypothetically invented it in 1919, and the 1920 mm-hmm. was the beginning of Prohibition. So,
yeah. So you wouldn't be advertising it necessarily. You wouldn't be advertising it as something that had alcohol. But New Orleans food historians are certain that you could get a grasshopper at the restaurant by 1919 and that waiters would add alcohol on the DL under their aprons after that. Also, Tujac's didn't have printed menus until 1980s, which wow. makes it a bit harder to pin down specifics.
Kentucky also claims to have independently invented this cocktail. An English chemist living near Louisville by the name of Lawrence Pugh blended one up in his home kitchen in 1949, so a minute later.
Yes, and this brings us to the Wisconsin version, which is essentially milkshake, I know. So it's also difficult to pin down this story, but it probably was the child of a Wisconsin supper club, like the one we mentioned at the top with that 3/4 gallon
version. Of ice cream added, sure, yeah.
Yep. Dessert cocktails were big at these establishments. Interestingly, no one really takes credit for it. I find a lot of times when we do these episodes, somebody's like, it's me, and someone else is like, it's me. No one's really vying for it specifically that I found.
That's nice.
Please write in, listeners, if you know a restaurant that's like, it's us. One part of it almost certainly has to do with Wisconsin's dairy industry, which was in full swing by the end of the 19th century. And you can see our Sunday episode for their claim to ice cream fame. You can also see our butter episode mm-hmm. for, yeah, their claim and the margarine butter fiasco. Well, fiasco. It's like a civil war.
It is.
I've been watching all the Marvel movies lately, so civil war between Iron Man and Captain America is on my brain.
Yeah.
But it's similar, butter, margarine.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Also, our sibling podcast, Ridiculous History, has a whole episode about that.
Yes, it is fascinating. Mm-hmm. But anyway, there was a lot of hardcore marketing for the dairy industry within the state and a lot of pride around it. So it makes sense that they would try to incorporate this into their cocktails.
Absolutely. And Wisconsinites were making ice cream cocktails as early as 1884. That's when a crank-operated milkshake mixer was first patented, and marketing materials for it included a recipe for a milkshake made with milk, ice, flavored syrup, and optional port wine.
Optional, indeed. Mm-hmm. And then when the blender debuted in the 1920s, also an invention out of Wisconsin, folks were like, seriously, what can we put in here? anything. They just were experimenting. And all these pieces came together and presto, blendo, ice cream, grasshopper. Since supper clubs were generally a more sophisticated atmosphere than a bar, people made a night of them. They usually were like a three-course meal type thing. Mm-hmm. So you would get a before-dinner drink and an after-dinner dessert cocktail. Grasshopper.
Yeah.
There are about 300 supper clubs still in operation in Wisconsin.
And if you're interested in ice cream cocktails and you happen to find yourself in Milwaukee, I haven't been there, but I've heard tell that you should check out Bryant's Cocktail Lounge. They've been in the business since 1938 and currently serve about 50 different varieties of milkshake cocktail.
Whoa.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. The grasshopper didn't really take off across the U.S. until the 1950s. It also went on to inspire, yes, a pie with a minty, fluffy filling and a chocolate cookie crust.
Supposedly, the pie happened when wife of that Kentucky chemist, Lawrence Pugh, got inspiration from her husband's cocktail. The pie filling consists of milk, melted marshmallows, and a drink or two worth of crème de menthe and crème de cacao.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. I have had one of those.
Yeah. Good little icebox pie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The grasshopper increased in popularity in the 1970s through the early 90s or so. The 70s were really big on cream-based cocktails. And then the push for sweet and brightly colored and vaguely milkshakey things through the next couple decades really just carried it through.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The early aughts ignored cream-based cocktails for the most part. But yeah, as we said earlier, they are resurging or, in some places, never left.
Yeah, I would really love for people, especially, I guess, in Wisconsin, to write in about this because I was trying to think of where I could get them in Atlanta where they're not, like, I would have to ask and hope the bartenders—
Didn't roll their eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. But, like, it's just on the menu, and I can only think of two, which two might be a lot. I don't know. But, yeah, I'd love to hear from people in different parts of the country.
Yeah, yeah. Is this kind of thing common on your menu? Did you grow up watching your parents or grandparents drinking it? Did when you came of a responsible alcohol drinking age, did you start drinking that kind of thing? Did it fall away from your cocktail purview, or has it always been part of it? It reminds me of the kind of like brunch cocktail offerings.
Yeah.
Of what are they called in New Orleans?
Ramos Gin Fizz?
Well, yeah, but the...
Eye-openers.
Eye-openers, yes.
Yes, yes.
The concept of an eye-opener drink, uh-huh. Which is a little bit sweeter and a little bit more caloric, like...
Right.
Sort of like the worst nutritional version of a protein shake for breakfast.
Yeah, but it'll open your eyes right up.
Heck yeah.
Heck yeah. So I think this brings us to the end of this, our cocktail hour on grasshoppers. We do have a little bit more for you. But first, we have one more quick break for a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with
Listener Mail.
It's like a hopping like of a grasshopper.
Yeah, there you go. It took me a second, but I got in there.
Yeah, you...
Ish.
You're a good partner to have on this our podcasting gig.
Oh, thank you. You're a good partner to have.
Oh, thank you. We're like two grasshoppers out in the wild. Libby wrote, as a child, my mom was obsessed with Days Gone By and would talk in depth about an old crusty cookbook that belonged to my great-great-grandmother. She would use the recipes in this book for household chores from cleaning silver to curing the common cold. There was a particular concoction that was always parked in the top shelf in our fridge once the cold winds of autumn started to blow. Always in a mason jar, looking dubious to my young mind, there would be a jar of amber-colored goop with dark onion strands floating in it. This was the cough medicine of my childhood. It was utterly disgusting. Apparently, my mother would boil sliced onions in honey for a certain amount of time, jar it, and place it in the fridge. If anyone had the tiniest of coughs, you would find yourself facing an overly large spoonful of this medicine. I cannot answer if this concoction actually did help, but I do know that I would stifle my coughs when around my mother. On the topic of crying while slicing onions, as a teenager, I worked at a Subway after school, and I was usually put in charge of slicing onions. I wore a lot of intricate gothic makeup that would have dripped on my face if I had gone unprepared. I started taking swimming goggles to work to slice onions. My makeup stayed intact. I'm sure it was a comical sight seeing a tiny gothic kid slicing onions in swimming goggles.
Oh.
But a beautiful one.
A beautiful one.
Oh, I love it so much.
Oh, the goth kid in me sees the goth kid in you. Oh. Oh, yeah. Katie wrote, "For as long as my mom and I can remember, I've always had a hard time going to sleep. Originally, part of this was because I wanted to stay up watching cartoons and the Disney Channel. One day, when I was 5 or 6 years old, my mom tried to gently encourage me to go to bed by changing the TV channel to something she thought I wouldn't like, thinking I would just leave from boredom. She decided to put on the Food Network, and I can safely say she didn't expect me to keep watching. The shows playing on Food Network at night weren't shows like Rachel Ray's or Emeril's. They were shows like Unwrapped, which showed how mass-made foods were produced. And, more importantly for the story, Alton Brown's Good Eats. Good Eats wasn't just a cooking show. Besides making enticing dishes, Alton often explained the science behind various things in cooking. Heck, that was the main reason he made the show, to explain science of cooking. He also explained such things in visually interesting ways, such as with giant models of fat molecules or using boxing puppets to represent the eternal fight for flaky or tender pie crusts. Thanks to this show, my young self got very interested in science, especially chemistry. I took pride in understanding the pH scale long before the topic was covered in school, and explaining fat and sugar molecules helped me with organic chemistry in my high school classes, too." Oh, yeah, I loved Good Eats.
Yeah.
Yeah, growing up, it was one of my favorites, certainly.
Yeah, as I said in that episode, I didn't really watch a lot of food TV, but I did love Alton Brown. I had a friend who watched a lot of it, so kind of like it would filter through that she loved Alton Brown, and he is local about town, so I've seen him a couple times, and it's always like, oh. Also, he has that video of him sabraging a champagne bottle, and I watched it before we sabraged a champagne bottle, and I still failed. But, he's a pro, and I'm not a pro.
Well, you know, especially then. We were just getting started out.
We were.
Yeah, he's got a couple years on us. So, we're working towards it.
True.
Yeah. I was a little bit older when the show started. A number of my friends got to work on that series.
And
really exciting. All the stories from it are absolutely lovely. And also I wanted to put in that Lillian on Facebook just wrote in, like, pretty much the same day, I think, to say that that Good Eats, or Alton Brown in general, is one of the shows that her and her 13-year-old get to watch together and enjoy the concept of cooking and science.
I love it.
Yeah.
Alton Brown, if you're listening, we're here, you're here.
Call us.
Yeah.
Or don't call us, because we don't have a phone number.
But you know what we mean. It's clear what we mean. Alton Brown. But in the meantime, while we're waiting for Alton Brown to contact us, thank you so much for all three of these listeners for contacting us. Mm-hmm. You too can contact us. If you'd like to email us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
You can also find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod. We do hope to hear from you. Savor is a production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thank you, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thank you to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.